Drive with Jeff, ABC Radio Perth.
Professor Peter Collignon is an infectious diseases physician and a professor of microbiology at the Australian National University. I think it's fair to say that Peter has spent much of today giving explanatory interviews about viruses to the media. Peter, I thank you for joining me. Good afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me.
Peter, where do you stand on the AstraZeneca available soon and manufactured here argument compared to the wait and see and hope we can get more of the Pfizer vaccine a little later?
Well, I think waiting and seeing that we get what looks at the moment to be the better vaccine is much more dangerous way to go. I mean, it does look like the Pfizer vaccine is better than the AstraZeneca on the available data, but I might say neither of them have gone through our approval process yet. So what the real efficacy is may be still debatable. But look, you know, the Pfizer one is better, but the problem is we're going to get 10 million doses, which is enough for 5 million people, and that's really good. And so far, the vaccine looks to be quite safe when given in America and Europe. So that'll vaccinate 5 million people. But we've got an awful lot of other people we've got to vaccinate as well. And the main other vaccine we're going to have available in large numbers before next winter, which I think is our main real risk,
yes,
and particularly for high-risk people, you know, people over the age of 70, is going to be the AstraZeneca. Now, you can argue it's not as good as Pfizer. That's probably true, but, you know, we'll wait and see. But if you can decrease your chance of dying from this disease by 70%, and being seriously, you know, admitted to hospital, that's worth doing. Because, you know, if you look at masks, for instance, that probably decreases our risk by 15 or 20%. This is markedly better protection than that. And so we should take it. Now, that's not to say we, you know, should not try and get something better if it proves to be better. But the other thing with the Pfizer vaccine, it's got to be stored at minus 70 during its transport and yes, any storage. Now, that's a big ask. I mean, freezers that we've got in our fridge get down to minus 20. So these are special freezers. And while it has that efficacy when it's rolled out in, you know, drug trials, vaccine trials, which are very, you know, strictly controlled and, you know, all the infrastructure is in place, in the real world, that's actually going to be a bit more difficult to do. I mean, GPs will probably have difficulty doing that. They're multi-dose vials as well. So, you know, the big advantage of the AstraZeneca one is it also can be, you know, kept at room, not at room temperature, in an ordinary fridge like, yes, you know, all other vaccines. Now, that's a big advantage for making sure when you give a vaccine, it's likely to work rather than it being activated because of some cold chain problem. So, look, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. It's going to be really important to follow this up. But also to put it in perspective, the influenza vaccine we give every year is between 30, 50% effective on average, depending on your age. So this is much better activity so far as we can tell, than what we do give out every year, and we believe in those at risk. That does decrease their risk of death.
That was so interesting, Peter, and I know that you'd made that comment earlier today, because a lot of people listening, you know, we've got a basic understanding here of percentages, and it's more complex than saying the Pfizer vaccine on the numbers is 33% more effective than the AstraZeneca, and you've talked about what opportunity the AstraZeneca would still provide, and that many of those people who died in Melbourne last year would not have died. But that observation about the flu jab, you know, we don't bother to ask about efficacy percentages when we get a flu jab, do we?
No, we don't. And for, if you're in particularly a higher risk group, you know, it does decrease your chance of dying on all the available evidence. And we would recommend it for those at risk. Now, the risk for people, in fact, it's the same risk groups as influenza, you know, causing death, particularly those who are older with underlying medical conditions. Well, this gives you much better protection against the 10 times worse infection as far as mortality is concerned. So while it's not perfect, I mean, if somebody can decrease my risk by that percentage, I would prefer the 90, but I will take the 70 until, you know, something appears. And realistically, you know, we're in a very good position in Australia. We've got very little COVID transmission, you know, compared to just about everywhere else in the world. And so the other problem with the Pfizer vaccine, we've got a contract for 10 million doses, and I presume that will be delivered. But, you know, there's a lot of vaccines going to have to be manufactured just to cover the people in America, you know, Europe, let alone India, Indonesia and everywhere. Now, maybe we can get some more by paying more money than other countries, but there's an ethical issue here. If we keep this under control, as I believe we should be capable of doing, then there are a lot of people who should be in ahead of the queue for that vaccine rather than us anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's other issues as well. The other issue that bring up is herd immunity, and I think that's very relevant because we want to get back to normal and not have to worry about this virus transmitting. But
yes.
If you look about respiratory viruses, the main ones we've been able to eliminate and keep eliminated are German measles and measles itself. And that was only when we had vaccines 90% plus efficacy and we had 90% of the population at least either vaccinated with natural immunity. Now, that's going to take a while for COVID, no matter what vaccine we work, because it's not only an issue in Australia, it's when you get the vaccine out globally, because there's so much virus everywhere else. Even if you're vaccinated and went to Europe at the moment, yeah, it decreases your chance maybe by 90% of getting infected. But, you know, at the moment, you know, 2 in 100 people coming back from those areas have probably got the virus. You get vaccinated, it'll still be 2 in 1,000, which is as high as the rate that was in Melbourne during the worst of its epidemic. So, you know, we're going to have to, these vaccines aren't an instant fix. I think the first thing we need to do is stop people dying as best we can with what we've got available. And the next thing is to stop transmission. But it's going to be a mixture of things for quite a while to come.
On the Drive program this afternoon, you are listening to infectious diseases physician and professor of microbiology at the ANU, Peter Collignon. What do you make of Peter's observations? We can act now. We can save lives. Yes, the Pfizer option may be a better option, but we can also improve our circumstances by wearing masks and other such things. Peter, just a couple little sidebar questions for you. One of our listeners said, Peter, is this likely to be an annual vaccine or will a couple of doses this year see us through despite the possibility of ongoing mutations of the virus?
Well, we hope so, but the honest answer is we don't know because the virus hasn't been around long enough nor vaccination. I mean, the available evidence is it doesn't change as much as influenza. And even this new British and South African variant, the vaccines are mainly made so that you make antibodies against what we call the spike protein, which coats the protein, coats the virus. And it's seen still in laboratories and as far as we can tell that it should work against it. But again, this is where you need ongoing studies that yeah. will be pretty obvious in Europe and America because they've got so much disease as to whether how protective the vaccine is against this new variant. At the moment, we think it will be pretty good and probably as good as what the original studies show, but this will be a matter of making sure we get data and wait and see. Even the vaccines at the moment have not, any of them, including the Pfizer one, have not had full approval anywhere in the world. They've had emergency provisional approval for about 12 months. So it still is really important that we get all the data in, both of how effective it is and its safety in all age groups, because often the really older people, there still isn't adequate data. So that's all essential that we keep on collecting that data, and particularly when we're going to modify doses or have one vaccine with another one following up, which is other suggestions, we have to make sure we have in place the data collection to check, well, does this work? Does it give it unexpected side effects, et cetera, et cetera? Because we need transparency of data that everybody can really look at and trust and say, hey, look, this vaccine is just as good as a lot of the other ones we have. Yes, it's worth doing because we don't want this disease and we definitely don't want to die from it or end up in hospital.
Peter, this is a very interesting discussion. We're going to hear a different opinion a bit later from Andrew Miller from the AMA here in Western Australia. But you've told us why there is merit with AstraZeneca and that there are we are going to have a range of options, that we are beneficiaries of time and geography in some respects too. But this is the question that I was really interested to ask you because I want to put our listeners' mind at ease about this, because this is the big story of the day. You know, it's being discussed everywhere and people will be catching snatches of the conversation and perhaps feeling worried. Peter, is there significant disagreement here, a concerning disagreement, or are these just, you know, well-contested views? This is just part of a robust and important discussion about what our vaccine priorities are.
Well, I think it's just a, you know, discussion, basically. I was on another ABC on the other East Coast this morning with the president of the Immunology Society, who, at least on face value, had quite different views. But I thought at the end, our views weren't that different. I mean, if we can get a better vaccine, yes, we should go for that, providing we really are sure it's effective in the field. But at the moment, there's really not a lot of prospects. You know, even with we know how much money we offer of getting more Moderna or Pfizer vaccine, and still the data is still preliminary. In the field, it may not end up being better than the AstraZeneca vaccine. We just don't know. So I think these are nuances. I don't think anybody is seriously saying don't vaccinate people, you know, for another year until we get the Pfizer vaccine. I do not think that would be wise. But we also have to be sure that these vaccines are safe and efficacious. And that's why the registration, both in America, Europe, except, and our own TGA, we've got to make sure that all the data is seen, not just what the, small amount of data, that this is safe, it works, and more importantly, that we can roll it out in an appropriate fashion between doctors, pharmacists, nurses, however we're going to give the vaccine. So when we give it, it's given safely, and it works when we give it.
Peter, really good to talk to you, and thank you very much for giving us your time this afternoon.
Jeff Hutchison is driving you home. ABC Radio Perth.